Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You've reached the Murder Between Friends podcast with Sherilyn Dale and Gavin Fish. Please stay on the line. This week's episode starts in 3, 2, 1.
Jennifer, I don't know if I think I did mention last week, Gavin and I were speaking to another family who is also having to deal with exhuming a body just for answers. And instantly, as we were talking about that with Danielle, I thought, oh my gosh, we have to talk to Jennifer. Because I think people don't understand what happens behind the scenes, you know, in all of these cases and everything that is required to simply get justice, when you think that that should just be easy, when we can all look and see, you know, black and white, this was not a suicide, or in Amanda's case from last week, this was not an overdose. Same with Teron, actually, right? That's also what they're trying to say. It shouldn't come to these lengths. But first, before we get into that, if anybody's listening right now that isn't familiar with Teron's case, can you just catch us up with that?
So I organized and led BLM Potsdam, New York in June 2020. My son Teron Evans Jr. moved to Potsdam just a couple weeks later. He protested with me from the time he got there. In September 2020, he met a woman that he started dating. And October 2020, he told me that her and him broke up. and her words were that, or excuse me, his words were, she said, he said she was crazy and that she said he was good. She was going to kill him. Also, in October 2020, I sat down with the... You got to excuse me. I'm just so tired. I sat down...
No, take your time.
Okay, Jennifer, please.
With the St. Lawrence County District Attorney, Gary Pasqua, in October 2020, requesting him to refer the case of a little boy who I had been pretty vocal about since I started Black Lives Matter. The little boy's name is Garrett Phillips, and he was unalived in his home in Potsdam, New York, 11 years ago now. And so I was requesting a district attorney to refer that case to the attorney general. That was, again, in October 2020. At that time, the district attorney said he would run it by his chief ADA. On January 8th, 2021, Teron's girlfriend, who I later found out her and her son are both police informants, they claimed that Teron unalived himself in their home in Potsdam. Also on January 8th, 2021, the chief ADA resigned. There were 5 responding officers. I only received 1 body cam video, which was redacted down to 2 minutes and 36 seconds. I was denied the supposed suicide note, the other body cam videos, statements. There were 5 people interviewed. I didn't get any of their statements. So it's a lot missing.
You went through the whole FOIL process?
Yeah.
And did you go through the whole New York State FOIL process?
Yes, I did. And I was told by the county attorney that I needed to become Teron's executive of estate to get his belongings and to get stuff through the FOIL, which I already knew I wasn't going to be able to get any of this stuff, the Teron's personal belongings, because Crystal had already denied that to me and the sheriffs. All I really wanted was everything I requested through FOIL, you know, so I was denied pretty much everything through FOIL.
This is something that I think a lot of listeners may not understand. In many states, Jennifer would be considered Teron's next of kin. Teron wasn't married to this woman, right? So Jennifer would be her next of kin, and so she would be entitled to, you know, by default, and I'm not using the right legal terms, but by default, she would be entitled to his estate. Anything that has to do with his estate. But in the state of New York, they make you jump through these legal hoops in order to officially become the administrator of the estate. This is the same thing that Leslie Brill Meserol had to do with the Amanda Winkowski case. It's what the Greenbergs have had to do with their daughter's case, Ellen Greenberg, in the state of Pennsylvania. And they're making you jump through those hoops just to get information about what they're claiming is a non-crime.
Right.
A suicide.
And I got the certificates for executor of estate for all his personal belongings, but they still denied me anything as far as FOIL. They said that doesn't go have anything to do with that, even after the county attorney told me that's what I needed to do to get his personal belongings and all the stuff through FOIL.
So what are they saying your next steps are for that, or are they just simply shutting that down?
So the district attorney is refusing to refer Teron's case to the attorney general. I put in another FOIL request and still have been denied everything that I've asked for, except this time I was told about the suicide note. I needed to contact Meta myself and get it. And
who did you need to contact?
Meta, because the supposed suicide note was supposed to be put on Facebook, and this girl, Krista.
Oh, so like Mark Zuckerberg. Yeah. You're supposed to get a hold of Mark Zuckerberg.
Uh-huh.
Oh yeah. My gosh.
So it was supposedly posted on Facebook and then deleted or something?
I've heard that it was deleted. I never got to see it. As soon as somebody forwarded me this B mentality page that this note was supposed to be on that I never saw before. So by the time I went to click on it, I was already blocked. And she blocked me from everything. And I say she because, yes, I believe she has control over that account.
Yeah, we believe that the girlfriend did, Gavin. So what Jennifer's talking about is a page was created with Teron's face saying that the name was Speed Mentality. And then this is where he put his note on. And didn't you also say that some of the posts were rather suspicious, like they didn't sound at all like Teron, like very religious and stuff?
Yeah.
And he didn't, you know,
yeah, there was
he wouldn't post like that.
So there was one post on there that people told me that they saw, and this was the only post that they ever saw on there prior to this supposed suicide note that nobody ever saw. And it basically, he had a picture with a shirt off talking about a stab wound, and it said in there, you know, God has other plans for me. Somebody tried to rob my life, but God had other plans, you know, this and that. And I know for myself, Teron was studying to be Muslim, and I never heard Teron, right. God, you know, never. So that was suspicious to me, right, to, you know, see that post.
Right, like the whole Facebook just didn't seem like it was being run by him at all, and now this is like where he allegedly writes this
suicide note,
you have to contact Mark
right.
Zuckerberg.
And then Crystal's the only friend on there, on that page.
Right, and that was it too. She was the only friend on the page and blocked you.
Yeah.
What is that reference, the speed mentality? What is that referring to? Does that have anything to do with Toronto?
SPII mentality? I have no clue.
So it wasn't anything that he, like an alter ego or something that you ever...
No, not that I know of.
Had heard from him. Can you talk a little... We talked a little bit about it on text, but I'd love to kind of know how you got to this point now and what the next steps are. You have been told that you need to exhume Teron's body, have a second autopsy done, and have him reburied. Can you kind of tell us why we're here right now? Why we're at this point?
Yeah, that makes me sick just thinking of it. I've talked to someone from the NAACP, and I was told that I need to basically get him exhumed, get another autopsy done. And that would be the best thing for that second autopsy to contradict the first one, which will prove that there was no suicide and that there is a cover-up. In that case, then, lawyers will run at me. Everybody will want the case then.
What is it about the first autopsy that you find objectionable that you're disputing or you don't believe, I guess?
Okay, so there's a couple things. On the autopsy, well, first of all, Crystal and her son say that Teron took over 60 pills. On the autopsy, there's no sign of pills, nothing in his stomach, no residue in or around his mouth, no signs of throw up. On the toxicology, it says a potentially lethal dose, okay? Doesn't say that it's a lethal dose. On the, what do you call it, the death certificate, I found out that that was certified before the toxicology even came back and was already labeled a suicide. So there's just everything, you know. Then there was a group of people who looked at everything, and from what they saw, between the pictures that I took of Teron and all the medical and, you know, everything they looked at, they see that, in their opinion, he was asphyxiated.
Now, the toxicology came back. Let's see, I'm trying to remember the pills that he supposedly would have taken or that Crystal claimed.
Right.
Wellbutrin, right? Wellbutrin, which is very hard to overdose
on. She said it was his bottle and
hers. What is Wellbutrin?
It's for antidepressant anxiety. Like, I've taken it. It's and you're not going to give people who are depressed, like, really lethal medication to help balance them out, you know? Like, it.
And I thought that was kind of weird.
Was it his medication?
It doesn't make a lot of
sense. I thought that was kind of weird, too, because, well, she said it was his bottle and her bottle, but it's supposedly from the same therapist, like the same day, pretty much around the same day, prescribed and all that for both of them.
They both got prescribed this. Yeah, right.
They both got prescribed Wellbutrin on the same day from the same therapist?
I believe it was the same day, yeah. Same therapist, definitely.
So Wellbutrin, the toxicology did say that Wellbutrin was in his body, right? Which it would be if he was prescribed.
Yep, that's what the toxicology said.
But did toxicology have any, like, specific, you know, whatever, milligrams per milliliter, you know, how much did it say was in there?
And that's another thing, too.
So they specifically, toxicology measured that.
Right. And that's another thing, too, on Teron's, the emergency form, with the emergency contact and all that stuff. So it has Teron's name and address, which would have been my address in Potsdam. But it also had next of kin, Crystal, with my address. And her phone number was actually the number that I had for Teron. And people that I know said that the number listed for Teron was actually Crystal's phone number. Yes.
On what next of kin form was that?
From the hospital, from the emergency room. The form that has, like, the insurance information, you know, all his personal information, next of kin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they just, and they had just met in August of that year.
Well, around September.
This happened in January.
It was about September that they met.
September. And all of a sudden, she's on all of his insurance, next of kin.
Yeah.
That is.
And also, the other thing about, well, the medical records and stuff, Teron's temperature was 97.7 just a couple minutes before he passed. So if he ate two bottles of pills, like her son said, they would have showed up.
Yeah.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So I'm just looking for this paper.
And he also, and I think this was also important too, is that, you know, it feels like you kind of have to defend Teron's character and stuff, and for people just to assume, oh, it's an overdose, oh, it was this. Like, he wasn't a drug user, and even you had a conversation with Crystal's son, who would have seen him in those, you know, the last few weeks, months, and said to you, oh, we know for sure that this wasn't a drug overdose because I've never seen Teron use drugs. He said that.
Yeah.
He was.
Yeah. He said it. Teron didn't use drugs. I can promise you that.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Bupropion, 63 ml. Hydroxybupropion, 1600. Gabapentin, 33.
These are milligrams per milliliter.
Yeah. NG/ml, and then THC.
No, I was just gonna, like, for our viewers/listeners, this is the way toxicology works. There are two stages to the way they do toxicology. The first is qualitative, is what they call it. They're just saying, They're just looking yes or no, is this thing in the sample that we have, right? Okay. And then what they'll do after that, once something is shown to be in the system, they'll do a quantitative. It actually takes a lot of work to do a quantitative test. That's why toxicology takes a long time sometimes. Okay. So the fact that they went through and did the quantitative test, I don't know, to me that just speaks to them wanting to either reinforce what the medical examiner has already said, or maybe dispute it. But the medical examiner said potentially a lethal dose of Wellbutrin.
Yeah.
Oh, see, that is so non-scientific to me. That is so non-scientific to me. Kills me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just it sounds like I.
Yeah, it says that,
you know, like just being so, like. So oh, yeah,
the words exactly are, the gabapentin is in the therapeutic ranges. This is the toxicology. The hydroxybupropion is in the usual toxic. The bupropion is in the potentially lethal range.
So they have some type of spectrum with different ranges, I guess.
Okay, and so I guess I think it's important for everybody to also know how much this fight costs, and how families are just not ever prepared for this. This is not, you know, like we talk about like, oh, let's get life insurance, let's get disability insurance. Nobody is equipped to fight for justice for their loved one. And so just for you to do this first step of arguing the autopsy, this is around like a $25,000 to $30,000 cost for you. So you and I have talked, I want to update everybody because people have been asking about Teron's case. So we'd like to, you know, try to get a fundraiser going to help with this cost. After that, I think that it's also important to know, then you have legal costs, right? So it's so much easier said than done, and I think that people don't understand that, what this entails to fight for. So, and at this point, you don't have a lawyer yet, right? Somebody asked me that the other day.
Right.
You don't, right?
And okay. You know, it's just upsetting, man, that, you know, we grow up and we learn things about our country, and, you know, we can't wait to that age to vote and this and that, and then you learn how that's all they want is our vote. Because nothing else matters, you know? And we live in a place where, like I said, pretty much we have to pay it forward to pay for our own justice, you know, just in case, you know? And especially for people like myself who speak up, and, you know, even like yourselves, you know? It's something we have to prepare for, and it's not normal. You know, it shouldn't be, at least. But it's sad that parents and loved families have to go through this rather than our government officials doing their jobs and listening to the people and investigating these deaths. This isn't just a problem in St. Lawrence County, New York State. This is a problem across America. But it's just sad that we have to go through this. How can we believe in anybody we vote for when we call on them and they don't respond?
Oh, it's extremely discouraging and makes you just, it gives me anxiety just thinking about it, because exactly like you're saying, you're made to trust, right? Like you have all your faith in the world. You just think, oh, you know, the justice system will prevail. No one ever thinks that this is what they're going to have to do if they're ever faced with a situation that no one ever wants to be in anyways. I mean, it's horrific. No mother should ever have to lose a child, and then to have to do this behind the scenes. I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but it almost seems like you're not even allowed to grieve your son right now because you're in fight mode.
I haven't, you know. I just constantly feel sick.
Yeah.
Sick to my stomach, you know, and I just want the truth and justice for my son. And I would prefer it if our system would do something that it's not used to doing, and actually work for the people, all people, at all times.
It sounds to me like the idea of getting the second autopsy is to take a closer look at the idea that he may have been smothered, right? So looking for signs of how he died that could have been other than an overdose of Wellbutrin. Right. So
yes.
there would be signs which as lay people, you, all of us, we don't know, but there are likely signs that would point to asphyxiation. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of the idea? Am I getting that right?
It's not only that, because that's not the only thing I've, you know, been told. Like, when it first happened, I was told that he was shot in her kitchen, you know. So it's to basically rule out the overdose of Wellbutrin, period, and find what the real cause was.
Right. And so are do you already have all of that preparation? Like, do we have a second medical examiner who is willing to take on Turan's?
Not yet. No,
I don't. Second autopsy?
No, where not we, yet.
Not yet? Okay.
I can probably help you with that as far as pointing you where to go.
I was just going to say, okay. Gavin. Yeah, I was just going to say, Gavin, do we know how to...
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Jennifer, let's, I want everybody to be directed to, where are you most active? TikTok, yes. I think, right? You keep everybody updated.
Yeah, it seems to be a better response. I have more people helping. You know, it's a lot better.
It is. I do love TikTok for that. The algorithm is quite favorable. It can be a little bit dicey, but for the most part, I mean, that's how I found you. You know, my viewers were on TikTok and found you, and that's how we got to meet. So anybody listening who wants to follow and send support and love to Jennifer. Jennifer, what is your TikTok?
Is it Jennifer
Backstrom?
There's Justice for Turan Forever and Jen Thomas Bidwell.
Okay.
We can put those links in the description and in the show notes.
Okay. In the description.
Yeah, that's... Okay. And Jennifer.
So I also added, like, to the list of people to contact. I don't know if you can add on to that. But the New York State Police, and that would be Lieutenant Colonel Richard Mazzone and Major Anthony Oliver. Okay. So the number's 518-897-2000. And that would be to request them to investigate the death of Turan Evans Jr. in Potsdam, New York. Because it's actually...
Who was the investigative agency?
The crime happened in Potsdam, New York, in the town of Potsdam, okay? So the closest law enforcement agency was Potsdam Police. So they responded first. But the... what you just called it, Lord have mercy. The investigating agency... is St. Lawrence County Sheriff's Department.
The sheriffs took it over.
Yes, the sheriffs. Huh. And one of the same sheriffs that I had already been calling out in regards to Garrett Phillips' murder, Deputy Sheriff John Jones, who was Garrett Phillips' mother's ex-boyfriend, he showed up at the scene of the crime, at the scene of my son's death also. And the New York State Police are actually the independent investigators for Garrett Phillips' case, the little boy I was already trying to get justice for before my son's death.
Right, that everybody in Potsdam was pretty much knowing that you were exactly on the right track, but everybody was so fearful and saying, you know, don't talk about it.
Leave it alone. Even one resident of Potsdam who worked at a bar where the law enforcement frequented overheard them saying, you know, she just keeps bringing up the past. She just keeps bringing up the past in regards to Garrett Phillips' case and how much they don't like me for that reason. And that was before my son's death. So there's a lot of people.
That's odd because
this is
investigators who want to get to the bottom of crimes, they continue to investigate sometimes decades after the fact, right?
Right.
So why would they be concerned about bringing up the past? They should be looking for the killer.
To protect their own, possibly.
Of this kid.
Yeah, because the sheriff was Garrett's mom's ex-boyfriend, who she was.
Yes, she was. She had written and had notarized notes in regards to her fear of Deputy Sheriff John Jones for her and her boys.
Now, have you been in contact with the new police department and these new detectives and given them, you know, like, put Turan's name on the radar, so if people contact, they're like, okay, we've got some momentum here.
I'm going to be calling the New York State Police and letting them know that. Everybody else knows, but the New York State Police, they know, because I talked to them early this year, and already explained everything to them.
I'll add that on my video as well for you, because I don't have their names on there too. But I told you what happened with my video, right, Jennifer?
I think you said something about because of the mention of suicide.
Yeah, it was
the mention of suicide. It was demonetized, which essentially, to anybody who doesn't like have a YouTube channel and stuff, it's not favored, because then advertisers can't put your ads on it. So YouTube is not going to show it to people unless you're subscribed to me, or unless you are actually logged into a registered YouTube account and confirm that you are over the age of 18, which means that your chances of getting normal views are very down. When you get demonetized, you are able to argue it to YouTube and fight the strike. And I did, and I've had to do this in the past just because of my content. I haven't had to do this up for about a year. I know how to, like, get around it. I've built up a relationship with YouTube where they just trust what I'm putting out there. Mm-hmm. And I argued it, and when I've argued in the past, it takes about 24 hours because somebody has to physically watch the entire video to confirm that the decision is valid, or they will change it. And most often, they change it. And this time I put in a request for an independent person to watch it. It was pretty much as soon as I sent that request, I got an email within 20 seconds in my inbox saying they've reviewed it and they stand by their decision. Like, the video is almost an hour long. I got this email instantly. I've never had that before. So I mean, it just adds to everything. It just adds to how frustrating this fight is, how not as many eyes are able to get on it. And
that's something I was going to say too, is, you know, it helps when, in my opinion, it helps when white women speak up for Tehran more so than I, because you get listened to more, but at the same time you get suppressed also, as in your situation.
We spoke about that too, and we had our call, which is the sad reality. And it's the whole thing is just so broken. Like, it shouldn't even be there. That shouldn't even be the reality.
Basically, to stop fighting for the FOIL stuff, because they're just going to keep fighting it and saying they don't have this and they don't have that and blah, blah, blah. And to just go with getting him exhumed, getting another autopsy, and then reburying him. I'm still going to push for the FOIL also.
Let me tell you a little a story that might help you when it comes to the FOIL.
Okay.
We were just, Sherilyn and I were just talking to Danielle Winkowski in our last episode. Her sister died in Buffalo, New York, and they ruled her death an overdose. Anyway, her mom, Leslie, continued to put in FOIL after FOIL after FOIL after FOIL, getting denied. It's the same story that you're sharing with us. She had to become the administratrix of the estate, and she had to do all these different things, right? All these hoops to jump through, and yet they still would not give her anything until one day she made a call to the Buffalo PD, and I think it was a captain that she spoke to, said, "Ma'am, your daughter died of an overdose. There's nothing for us to investigate. We're not investigating it. It's not an open investigation." And once he said those words, bing, she had it. So she then went and wrote an affidavit, had it notarized, saying, "A captain from the Buffalo PD has said they are not investigating the case. Therefore, it is closed." And she put in a new FOIL request with that affidavit and won. Then she got everything.
Wow.
She got everything.
Hmm. Okay.
So that might be something that you look to do. Call people and just listen very closely to what they're telling you. And remember, in New York State is a one-party consent recording state. So you can record every conversation you have with any police, anybody in the state of New York. I'm not a lawyer, but that's the way the law reads to me, okay?
You're pretty good at this stuff, Gavin.
Yeah.
You know your way around.
Well, there have been times where I've wanted...
Having that.
Yeah, I've wanted to record something, and so I've gotten in my car, driven on my Mary to New York State, and I made the call because it had to be done that way. I can't do that in Pennsylvania. Anyway, record everything you do.
You drove there.
Yeah.
You drove there so that you
can... Yeah.
That's awesome.
Absolutely. And then so that you can prove that somebody's told you they're not investigating your son's case. It's a closed case. At that point, everything is public record for the administrator of the, or the administratrix of the estate. Leslie Brill Meserol got it done that way, and it took her 8 years, but she got it done.
Good Lord.
So you can too. I believe in you. But it takes grit.
She can follow suit. Yeah, exactly. She can follow suit now and make the calls right. And some of that legwork's already been done in terms of being like, okay. And I think you're pretty close to having people tell you that this is closed, right? Because that's what
they've already told me it's closed.
For you too.
Yeah, that was April.
Yeah,
I think March, April last year. It was closed.
Do you know who it was who told you that?
Detective Karenji.
Do you know who it was who told you the case was closed?
St. Lawrence County Sheriff Detective.
Write an affidavit.
Okay.
Write an affidavit, what he told you, the date he told you that, and then submit that with your FOIL as proof that the case is closed, therefore you get access to the case file.
Okay.
They'll make you pay for it. It's 25 cents a page or it's 50 cents a page. They'll hate you for this.
Okay.
But who the freak cares if they hate you?
Right.
You know, go after
them. Exactly.
Well,
keep us posted with that then, Jennifer. Let's start there and let us know what they come back with. I like to do wine fundraisers with my audience. Okay. So I have one on the queue to do for you and Teron and get some attention. So I'll let everybody know when I get closer to that. It'll be before the end of the year. And I'll have a site. That's kind of actually what I'm waiting on right now. A legit site where everybody can kind of see where their donations are going. Make it exciting so that they can be like, oh, you know, like $5,000 more until we hit and get everybody really involved. Right. So I will keep you and everybody listening posted on when we do that. But that'll be in the next couple weeks here.
This is definitely a case where it's worthwhile. We should be raising money, anything that we can.
100%.
Listeners, listen, and viewers, these families that have these tragedies happen to them. And tragedy is like the understatement of the century, right? There's no word strong enough or powerful enough to describe just how life-shattering this kind of stuff is. They then are abused again by a system that requires them to spend sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars just to fight for justice. And it just gets under my skin. I'm just so angry about that.
I would have never.
Most people don't have the money to fight.
And that's exactly it.
You never know how bad this fight is until you have to do it yourself. You know, prior to my son's death, I cried numerous times for moms and dads and brothers and sisters. It hurt, but there's nothing like this. You know, and then knowing this, what you have to go through just to get truth and justice and can't mourn, you don't have time for it.
Exactly. And like you said, when we first got on, you're just exhausted.
I am.
And Sherilyn and I hear that time and time again, right? No time to mourn. I have to keep fighting. And you can't heal.
Right.
You can't heal if you
that.
Can't properly mourn the loss of your loved one.
Right. And people don't understand that, you know, and it's like they tell us what we should do. And, you know, I don't want to be mean and be like, you go through what I'm going through. You know, it's just mean, but people don't understand. This is not something they would ever want to go through.
Yeah.
Ever, ever, ever. And this is why they should stand up and fight now.
Families in your situation.
Because we're supposed to be making
Fight for somebody else so that you don't have to fight for... Yeah.
So that you don't have to do it yourself, because imagine being in this situation. Like I said, too, you know, we're not equipped and prepared for this. We prepare for every other situation in our lives except for this, corruption, murder, you know, somebody being murdered and fighting for justice. Like, that's just...
Right. Now,
Leslie Brill Meserol told me one time, she's the mom of Amanda Winkowski. She's like, people don't understand how I'm feeling, and I wouldn't wish this feeling on my worst enemy. I don't want them to have to understand what I'm feeling, but I need them to understand what I'm feeling, you know?
Exactly.
It's
No, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, Jennifer. Thank you so much for coming on. It means so much to us to hear from you. I know how hard this is for you, how exhausted you are, and I can't even imagine just having to retell the story over and over just to simply have people, you know, get mad alongside of you. And we're mad, very mad. We aren't going anywhere. We're going to do everything that we can to keep fighting for you, for Tehran. So everybody listening, please go follow Jennifer, follow along with any of her updates. And also, like I said, I'll be doing some fundraisers coming up here and keep you guys posted too on the fight. But I got goosebumps when Gavin was saying that affidavit stuff. So let's get going with that too right away.
Yeah, you can win that. I've seen it happen. Okay. You can win that.
Okay. Can you email me, Gavin? And just kind of reiterate what you said.
Yes.
Exactly what I need to do. Okay.
Yes. Yep, I'll follow up with you. And then when it comes to finding a way to get a second autopsy, I have, I don't have experience myself on that, but Leslie Brill Meserol does, and I can reach out to her and she can point me in the right direction.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Both. Yeah, thank you so much.
The very least I could do.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. I'll be in touch with you, and then Gavin, you'll email her.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much,
We'll talk soon.
Have a good day.
All right.
I wasn't even just being theatrical. Like you, I had goosebumps when you said that. I think we're on to something there.
When I learned that, can you hear my dog?
Can you hear my dog
in the background? Can you hear, like, I don't know if it's a tractor outside or something. It's like the busiest day in my tiny town outside my house. It's the worst. I'm sorry.
Is that why you muted earlier?
Yeah.
I'm like, why is Gavin mute himself?
Yeah, it's just, I don't know what is going on outside, but it is loud. So maybe if I do one of these things, I don't know. But
yeah.
When I first met Leslie, and this is over the last couple of episodes, I've been thinking about Leslie a lot. When I first met Leslie, that was probably the first time I had ever met somebody with what I now just describe as grit, the grit that is required to fight for ever, right? To not stop fighting. And I can tell that Jennifer has that, you know, she has that grit. She's going after it. Something that the Elmquist share, that the Greenbergs share, you know, they're just like, I don't care. I'm going to keep going. When I found out from Leslie how she was able to get the documents after 8 years of fighting with the Buffalo PD, that little trick completely worked, completely 100% worked. Wow. There's one other trick that I want to share with her, I'll do it by email, but let me share it with you just for our listeners and viewers' sake.
Yes.
In the United States, I don't know if this is true anywhere else, but in the United States, every sworn public servant, so that, I mean, every sworn public servant, or even people who aren't sworn but work for sworn public servants, they have to be covered by an insurance policy that ensures that they abide by their oath. I think it's just called a public servant's surety bond is usually what it's done. Sometimes it's done under like umbrella policies, but they are required to fulfill their oath, and they keep insurance in order to make sure that they do. So one of the things that in the state of New York, it's called the Freedom of Information Law. People at first think that I'm misspeaking. It's not FOIA in New York State. It's FOIL. It's the Freedom of Information Law.
Right.
One of the main weapons that public servants have in their arsenal is just ignoring your request and hoping that you'll go away. Okay. So if they do that, they're not upholding the oath that they swore or the office holder in their department swore. So one of the little tricks that I do is I go and I get a copy of their insurance policy or their surety bond, and I make a claim against it.
Wow.
I mean, that's how I got Julia Davis. I didn't just call and they gave me 600 pages and 200 photos. they ignored me. Yeah, they ignored me. So I started calling to the county and figuring out what the insurance policy was. I got a copy of the insurance policy. I then got a copy of the oath that the person who was ignoring me signed. And I filed a claim. Yeah. As soon as that claim is filed.
Okay. Okay.
Then I got my stuff.
So when the claim's filed, then they're like, oh, okay, I'm going to listen now because they don't. So nothing went through in terms of the claim. It was that got their attention and they were like, oh, okay, here you go, Gavin.
Yeah,
okay.
I dropped my claim once they sent it. But had they continued to ignore me, I would have taken that claim for $1 million. That's what the insurance policy was. I would have taken it all the way.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
No.
So,
Kate, this is the most informative episode we've ever done.
People shouldn't have to know this crap. People like Jennifer shouldn't have to know this.
And you know what? This is perfect. So they shouldn't have to know. And this is all like what we're saying, like, right? Like that is like the theme of this episode, I think. You shouldn't have to do this. You shouldn't have to prepare for this. But you should know. Right? Like, isn't that crazy that we should know that? Like, how do we not know that? We need to be equipped with this because this is when changes start. When more people who haven't actually personally gone through this are standing up and fighting and calling this out like that. You know, if everybody put a claim against the officials in Tehran's case and said that they're going to go sue them for $1 million, can you imagine what would happen?
Yeah. And those, like those insurance policies carry a lot of weight because like they'll have a $25,000 deductible for the for the office holder, right? So if say they've got a $500,000 coverage for, you know, keeping your oath or $1 million coverage, whatever. Anytime somebody makes a claim on that, they have to pay $25,000. They have to pay.
Right.
So they take it very seriously and nobody knows about it. So as soon as I started making those calls, I can just imagine that behind the scenes, people were frantic. They're like, holy crap, there's a citizen that knows this and we've never dealt with this in 50 years. What do we do? What do we do? What do we do? What is he asking for? You know, why is he doing this? And then like an hour later, hey, Gavin, I was just waiting for permission to send this to you. How would you like me to deliver it your way?
Oh, you know? My freaking goodness.
Yeah, that's the way it is. So, yeah, when I found out what Leslie did, the whole affidavit thing, she was given that advice by somebody who shall remain nameless and in the background, who is a brilliant legal mind.
Okay. I think we referred to this person on our episode with Danielle, right?
It was a still plan. Still nameless. Yes. But it was a plan where Leslie was told by this person, this is what you need to do. It's almost entrapment. It's not legally entrapment, but it's like, you've got to get somebody to tell you that they're not investigating the case. Start making calls. And Leslie was like, that she went call after call after call after call until finally somebody said, Mrs. Meserol, nobody's investigating this case. It's closed.
But I have goosebumps up my spine. Like, I just like this is what I love. You know, like when people are like, you know, what about it in true crime? And it's the justice, right? Like, that's why I love to focus on the victims. You're the same. And this shit right here, this is what gets me going and keeps me so into it this whole time, because it's like, I don't know, there's something about sticking it to you when there's injustice going on, you
yeah
know?
Yeah. The what was another one that I did also in New York State? I wanted to do a FOIL. It doesn't matter what the details, but I wanted to do a FOIL, and so I put in my FOIL. It was declined because I wasn't specific enough. Like, we can't fulfill your request because when we do that search, the computer crashes. That was the claim. And, okay, so you want me to narrow my request down. Is that correct? Yes, if you would please narrow it down. You got it. Okay. So then I was like, okay, well, there are this many people. There are employees of the government. I think it was like 500 people. And these are the date ranges. So I will do one for every person and every date within that range and send off to him 6,500 individual FOILs. There you go. There are 6,500 individual FOILs. Have at it. Call me back. Mr. Fish, what is it that you really want here? I want you to do your job. That's what I want you to do.
I love it.
Yeah, so
I love it. There is no one like you, Gavin. There really isn't. And like who does this? This is why you're my favorite. And even just learning that about about you driving into New York so you can record people and it can be legal.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Oh,
I love
dude,
it.
I would get in so much trouble in the state of Pennsylvania. You cannot record without the other party knowing. In fact, I just looked at a criminal complaint last week or maybe the week before where an inmate who was housed in a county jail in the state of Pennsylvania. This is like a stupid criminal moment here. This is brilliant. But an inmate who was a habitual offender, he had been in and out of prison his whole life. He wanted to talk to like the chief of police, and he wanted to talk to the district attorney, and he wanted to talk to all these different people in town about his case. But he didn't want them to know that he was apparently that he didn't want them to know that he was currently in the jail. So he, so he called, because what happens when you call somebody from jail, it says an inmate from such and such prison is, you know, and so it announces,
you may be recorded.
Are you accepting this call? Right. He didn't want them to have that recording. So he called a friend who also was dumb enough to do this. And that person, and then did the three-way call. So he called the friend from jail, and then that person called the chief of police.
Okay.
And then called the district attorney, and then called all the, he made all these calls, 15 calls, something like that. And then the chief of police, once he hung up, he's like, wait a minute. I seem to remember that one of my officers arrested him, starts looking him up. Hey, he's currently housed in the jail. And then he goes to the jail. The chief of police goes to the jail and finds the recordings of all of these calls that this inmate made. New charges, one count for every single call. And so, and
because it was recording.
They're felonies. They're felonies. So this guy who probably was in jail for like 90 days or something like that, if he's convicted on these things, he's going to be many years in prison. So, like, you got to be careful about laws like that.
So you have to know what anybody listening right now that's like all like ready to just go and record some phone calls. Please
secretly
look up
record
what you're
people.
Doing.
Yes, that's right. No,
go drive to New York. You'll see Gavin in the at the border crossing.
And don't think that you can just say
both feet over.
Yeah, don't think that you can just say, "Oh, I was in New York at the time I made that call," because you know that they're going to take checks, cell phone towers, and all that stuff, right? You got it.
Cell phone towers, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That is just
Jennifer Backstrom. Amazing. She is my hero, and I'm sorry that she is in that.
Isn't she just? I am too. I don't know. I feel it though. She's one of those that we've adopted, you know, like we have our family, and then we have our adopted family along this journey. And I know that Jennifer will be with us for the rest of time now, especially until we get justice for her.
Let me just understand this case. She started digging into an old cold case that somehow involved a deputy sheriff, right?
Yes.
He was somehow involved. He had made threats against this child's mother or something like that, right?
So, essentially, yes. Yeah. So it was her ex-boyfriend, and he was the chief of police. And so I would have to go back into the documentary if anybody's listening and you want to learn more about this case. It is,
Go to Sherilyn's channel. She's got really a really good video. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. On Tehran's, yes. But in terms of Garrett Phillips, he's a little boy. And so it was his mom's ex-boyfriend is the chief of police.
Where's that documentary?
So Garrett Phillips, you can find that for free, I believe, on Amazon Prime or YouTube, I think even has it.
Okay.
For free.
All right.
So it's called Who Killed Garrett Phillips?
So Garrett Phillips dies, and there's this mystery concerning some type of corruption within this little town's because of this guy.
Yes, because they charged another ex-boyfriend of hers named Nick Hillary, who was a black man. So she was white, Garrett's white, the chief of police is white, and her ex-boyfriend, Nick Hillary, who she did not have any issues with, became the prime suspect, went to jail. A lot of people fought for him because there was absolutely no evidence that he was involved whatsoever.
Was he convicted?
He has been released, but I don't think that I don't think the charges have been dropped. Yeah, he was in jail. And so he went through trial. He was convicted. I can't remember what he was sentenced to, but he was now released. See, this is why I have to go back into that case. So he is released at this point, but if I'm remembering this correctly, it could be like one of those stipulations where he's actually not completely absolved of, you know, the charges. Right. Like they're not investigating any further because they still feel like they had the right person.
So Jennifer sees that it's a miscarriage of justice, decides to start doing what she does, right? She's protesting, she's making a stink, she's loud, right? And they're not liking it.
Yeah.
And then the next thing she knows, and I know that I'm, her son is dead in the company of a police informant. And the same guy who is involved in Garrett's death is on scene when her son is killed.
Yes, who had no, I mean, essentially he's the sheriff, but like, why would a sheriff ever come to a suicide call? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like when all of those officers are coming, why would this sheriff that she's making us, you know, like that she's kind of putting some pressure on, and he wasn't even, how was she explaining it? It was he was part of the next county or something. So I know, like, I'm sure obviously he had like jurisdiction over everything, but really it should have just been within like the Potsdam.
Yeah. So there's like a city police, right? Within the county.
Yes.
Typically the sheriff will take care of the county and any place that's not incorporated as a city, right?
Yes.
So the sheriff shouldn't have necessarily even been there at all because the city police were already there.
Exactly. There was two officers on scene. What the heck do they need a sheriff for if you're going just to an overdose call?
Yeah, that's definitely suspicious. And
it was never mentioned that he was there. This was not until Jennifer started really fighting for records that she found out. And I believe it was like on maybe her second or third request of asking for more stuff and calling up, being like, okay, well, this is missing. Oh, who is this officer on the scene? And then finally she got all of the names that were there. Again, she's still missing statements, but that's when all of a sudden she noticed, what the heck is John Jones doing at my son's call?
Yeah. Now,
can you imagine? You can't make this stuff up.
Here's the thing. I've said this a million times before. I am not a conspiracy theorist. I don't buy into crazy conspiracies. However, there are two caveats to this. Number one, conspiracies happen, and my exhibit A to that are the anti-conspiracy laws that are on the books. Right. If conspiracies weren't happening, we wouldn't have made laws.
They wouldn't be there
against them.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Number two, oftentimes there doesn't have to be a coordinated conspiracy if the incentives align. And that's a George Carlinism, right? You don't have to have a giant coordinated conspiracy. You just have to have a lot of people who have incentives that align. And then it you know, the.
And there's that, I think, I agree. And I think there's also, you know, that, like what's between differentiating what's conspiracy and what's corruption, you know?
Right.
It's so easy to play off, oh, this is a conspiracy, when it's like, no, bro, that's corruption. What you're doing is
that little
you
town,
have a motive.
Potsdam, New York is so far north. It's along the Niagara River, looks like. Is that the Niagara River up there? I can't remember, but it's nearly Montreal. It is in the middle of nowhere, New York. The little towns and little out of the way places to me are just absolutely famous for good old boy networks and that kind of corruption.
Yeah.
So
she's out of there now. I did ask in my first time talking with her, I said, before we get started, I've lost sleep over you, you know, because I'm like, we got to get you out. If you need to come stay with me in Canada, I have a room for you. But so she's out of there, and that made me feel a lot better with her fight, because I just, and like you said, I mean, I don't want to go on a big conspiracy tangent here, but when, you know, just talking with her, and when I'm like, how did they even meet? You know, like everything seemed so convenient that he met this girl in September, and just the way that meeting happened, like in terms of, like, we still don't know, like, exactly at what point they met, like where they met, but how she came into his life. And then all of a sudden it was just like this, she had this like pull on him and had things over his head. And
were they cohabitating within a, was he living there?
So I think he was spending most of his time, yes, there, but never like, okay, like we're living together, all my stuff's here. I think that he was living with Jennifer, but kind of going back and forth and spending time with her and stuff.
So there would be
even one time in. No, so I was just saying that there was one time where he didn't, Jennifer hadn't talked to him maybe like for a day or so, and just checking in because she was used to seeing him at the house, and messaged because he was like impossible to get a hold of when all of a sudden he had this girl in his life. And so Jennifer messaged the girlfriend on Facebook and was like, hey, you know, have you spoken to Taron? I haven't talked to him. And she didn't reply. And then all of a sudden replies, and it's this like, oh, so you're hunting me down. There's no business of you messaging me unless it has to do with me. And she was just like, I was just asking. Well,
I'm trying to find my son.
Just trying to talk to him, just see what he's doing. A mom, like, why does it have to be bad? You know, like, I don't know. The whole thing is just, it's so.
I saw that in your video. I was like, that is just weird. That's like somebody who doesn't have a grasp on reality. That response was from somebody who doesn't have a grasp on reality. It's like, you don't understand that a mom who hasn't seen her son, the mom could be 90 and the son could be 70. It doesn't matter, right? If a mom doesn't know where her son is, she's going to want to find him.
Exactly. And just like, and why is it aggressive? You know what I mean? Like, that would even be like just me like checking, you know, like, my mom calling Brent and being like, hey, something's up with Sherilyn's phone. What are you guys up to? Miss
Brent's
you.
Like, hey.
You know, like, does he
even...
Yeah. Why are you going to message me?
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
It's weird.
Okay. I don't know. It's just a weird reaction. And it's all of these things that add up, right?
Yeah. So for me,
what happened?
The most important thing is going to be that autopsy. And I'm not sure that I agree with with the advice that she was given, it sounds like, from the NAACP. I don't know that that's necessarily the best advice, but it seems like she is a conscientious person who is seeking advice and making her decisions based on her own, her own thought processes. But
yeah, well, and we don't know where to start in this situation, right? Like, I wouldn't know what to do. I would just take every piece of advice. So I think that's why I got goosebumps, because it's like, okay, can we get the answers, like, or start this in a different path now instead of exhuming him? Because how painful is that? Whereas, like, you know, now our first fight of, you know, this next stage is to get them to admit that this case is closed and give her the full report, not 2 minutes of a 60 minute cam, you know, body cam footage. I mean, I can't even imagine what is on the rest of that body cam footage that they didn't submit, because when the piece that she did get was disturbing. You saw the video. If anybody's listening hadn't, you see the officer walk into the bedroom. Taron is on the bed, and he kind of nonchalantly goes over to try to resuscitate him, give him CPR. He's doing it on the bed with one hand. Like, I'm not even trained.
Yeah, to me, that looked like he knew.
And I know that you go.
To me, like, he checked his pulse. He checked.
Why even do that? Yeah. And then just goes and, oh, go get the Narcan. Like, you move him on the floor. At least make it look like you tried to.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you. To me, it looked like a cursory, this is what I need to do in order to show on my body cam that I made an effort, right?
Yeah.
It's like, checked his pulse here, checked his, I know he's dead, but I'm going to go ahead and do compressions just so that it's on camera. I've got a cousin who may as well be my brother, who is a fire captain out west. The way he made it up through the ranks was as a firefighter, EMT, and as a paramedic and all that. So I'm going to ask him about that because he tells me stories sometimes where it's like, by the way, the comportment of that guy, the way you described it as nonchalant, I'm not totally arguing with that, but you do want somebody who can walk into a really, really terrible scene to just calmly
and
say,
have
okay,
composure.
So it could be that he doesn't care, or it could just be that he's keeping his composure.
He already knew and he's keeping his composure. That's fair. I like that you said that.
I think that is fair. So I'm going to call Scatterbones and see what he thinks about that.
Scatterbones.
He's probably like, please don't put that anywhere on the internet. I'm a professional. People like me and respect me. Why would you do that?
All of his coworkers just
dude. Okay, roll up. here's something, and I'm sorry to belabor this, but when we were in Minnesota, I won't say the word, but when we were in Minnesota, your mom has a little pet name for you. That is the cutest thing I've ever heard in my life. And every time she said it, I was like, this is best mom ever. Best mom ever. That is the cutest thing. Oh, my goodness.
And you know, I don't care if everybody knows it because, if you were ever to see us in public, I don't even know when my mom has ever called me Sherilyn. Like, I've got to be in a lot of shit where she's – even if she's referring to me to other people – she calls me Newt, right? Or Nudie.
Or Neuter. Oh,
so
Neuter.
It's like, so it's like she'll be like, oh, and then, you know, she's sitting there folding laundry with Nancy and being like, oh, I wonder, I'm going to go visit Gavin and Nudie out there. I'm going to go see what they're up to.
I do that with
there.
My kids. Nudie. Our oldest, our daughter, is just Smoo to me. Smoo. And it started with Smoochie. Sometimes I say Smoochie, but it's usually just Smoo. Hey Smoo, how you doing? How's school going? And then
nicknames.
Our fourth child, our youngest son, he's Lemon. And he hates it. He just hates being called Lemon, but I'm sorry, I get to call you what I call I brought you into this world. I didn't. I was part of it.
I could have named you Lemon. You better be excited that you're not named Lemon.
And he's like trying. How about you call me something cooler? Call me Red. No, I'm not gonna call you Red Lemon. I'm gonna call you Lemon.
Yeah, you can't choose your own nickname.
That's not the
it's
way
like when
this
you're
works.
Like a fighter. You know, like your moniker has to be given to you by somebody else. You can't just choose who you want to be.
That's right. Fighter pilots don't get. They don't choose their call signs, right? You don't get that. So anyway, when your mom was calling you that, I thought that was the cutest thing ever. That was so adorable. Just melted me. So cute.
Oh, I love that. I forgot. I forget that people are like, don't know that that's like what she called, and like what that must sound like to to other people.
There was a moment where we were in like the Landmark Center there in downtown Minneapolis, and I don't know what you said or did, but she had a moment where she was just disappointed in that moment. And she was just like, oh, Neuter.
This is terrible. I think that's a great place to leave everybody.
Me too. Thanks for watching, everyone.
We love you. We'll see you in the next episode.
All right.
Stay tuned for updates here.
Yeah. Well, I'll just keep going on and on. We have a cool next episode after this one, too. guys are gonna
very
love it.
yes okay, so stay tuned, subscribe, like, do all of the stuff, share with your veterinarians, your dog walkers, your neighbors, aunts, uncles,
beauticians.
We need the support. Okay, love you. Bye.
Bye.